Steve, and I'm an alcoholic.
How do you like to be?
When I look back, I can really see that I was an extremely, extremely sick individual for many, many years, both before I came to AA and after I got sober in AA. I realized it took me a long time to be able to apply what I learned in my head from the literature and heard in the rooms to what I did in my life, my actions. You see, it's only me that knows truly, as each one of us know, our own personal actions and when we are in life with that. It's easy to come into these rooms, talk a talk, quote the book, talk about the steps, say this, that, and the other, and appear to be sober. But I have found when I'm alone with me, and when I deal with people, now that I have actually, I've become part of society again at 55 years old in a few weeks, part of society and a respected member of society, I really realize where I'm at when I'm dealing with people and how scared I am, how honest I am, when I leave situations, how I feel. Because I'm a person that had fear from the time I was born, it seems. As far back as I can remember, I was scared. And I always try to hide that. I always felt different, like I didn't belong in this world. And I always tried to hide that. When I found alcohol, it became easier to hide that. Because now I can be the real man that my father was trying to teach me to be. A real man that could stand up, take no shit from anybody. When alone at night, I was scared. And I need more and more booze in order to play the role. Needless to say, my life took me to prisons, to jails, to mental hospitals, to a lot of resentments, to a lot of violence, and to the number one problem that still I carry with me today, and that's self-pity. They say resentment's the number one offender, but I have a feeling that self-resentment or self-pity is my number one offender. I have to work very hard in order to not feel sorry for myself. That's why I'm here tonight. I remember this room because it's an important room to me. The man here that was very important in my life, his name was Jean. He started this group and he took the time. When I was very sick back then, I would meet him a few times a week. We'd go for a coffee and he was a humble guy. And he just told me how it was. Simple guy. Tell me pride. You have a big problem with pride. It pissed me off that you tell me I have a problem with pride. I thought that's not the case. I have a problem with fear. He would say to me the reverse coin of fear and pride. It's the same thing. So you have a problem. That problem didn't go away. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous and get my first big book in 1985. Clayton here gave me my first big book in 1985. He told me word for word, I have no use for it, Steve, here. He introduced me to AA. 1985. He was building a sailboat in his apartment. I think it was up on in Cotonage. And I took that big book and I put it on the shelf. And I went out and got a beer and a few joints. And it wasn't shortly after that I was sitting in the Carrie St. Louis. I was sitting there with a brown bag, drinking a beer, smoking a joint, and I was wiped out. All of a sudden, all these people swarming into the park, and they all had badges on them. And they came over to me like a magnet. Ah, they were looking for somebody like me. It was the World Convention, 1985, 50th anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous. Every sober alcoholic was in Montreal. And they all seemed to be in that park saying to me, they were all trying to close-step me. And I said, what the hell is this? I didn't understand what it was, but I was desperate. And I was to feel the feeling many times. I felt alone, terribly apart from. I was sitting on a bench trying to fit in with everybody else in the park, smoking my joint, drinking my beer. I felt alone. They took me over to La Cité. They were having part of the World Convention at the Hotel La Cité. They brought me into this room and I saw these big pots of coffee with the lights on. I thought, oh, but it was so smoky. Everybody smoked in those days in meetings. I said, get the hell out of here. These people are nuts. They're smoking like crazy, drinking coffee like crazy. I'm going to go and have a beer. So within 3 months, I had, I was convicted for another stretch for previous assaults. And I went away on a short trip to Bordeaux for 6 months. I'd been in federal institutions, and I'd been in Bordeaux before. Here I was lucky to get a six-month sentence. And I went to a meeting there, December 1985, and there was a fellow there that I remembered particularly well. And I didn't get sober at that time. And I tried many times after that. At one time, I did stay sober from 1988, April 88, until 1995, 7 years. It was, I thought, the best moments of my life. But I've learned it wasn't, because I can look back now in my life now, and my life now is at an unimaginable point. I could never, ever have dreamed that my life would be where it is now if I had thought about it then. Many times I ended up doing overdoses, my stomach pumped. I don't know how many times. I've had people come to 1270 and in St. Mary's. I remember there was a guy named Sally Ann, Mike, and Chris, who spoke here a few weeks ago. They came to talk 1270, and I was in restraint, drunk. And they're saying to me, you're powerless. And I'm saying, fuck you, I'm not powerless. Don't tell me I'm powerless. No one tells me I'm powerless. But inside I was crying because I knew that I was totally alone. And I was fighting against the very people that were trying to reach out to help me. And people had tried to help me for decades that I had ran into. Not necessarily in AA. I couldn't change. I couldn't take the needed action. I couldn't feel part of what AA is. AA is a community of recovering people. I couldn't get involved deep enough in the fellowship and to be able to go to somebody and say, I have a resentment. I have a problem with this. I don't know what to do with this. I couldn't go deep enough because of what Sean said. Pride, be able to tell people when I was hurting. So therefore, I ended up playing the game of AA, faking it till I make it, sitting in big book studies, saying all the right words, quoting all the right quotes, but leaving feeling terribly alone. Trying to have a relationship with a woman, I couldn't have a relationship with myself. And there would be anger between us, and it would be like unbelievable, incredible anger, which seemed to just twist me badly. It's something I couldn't deal with. If somebody had told me when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous that I would have suffered the amount that I suffered since I came to AA, I would have killed myself immediately. If somebody had told me that since 1985, the things that I have gone through and the experience that I have experienced, that I would have had to experience then, I would have just gone, give me the gun, it's over, what's the use? Because it has been the only way that I have learned. I've had to suffer and suffer terribly deep pain. But my problem is, being an alcoholic, is I try to avoid the pain. I have found that I have made the most gain in my life, and especially in my contact with God, as I understand God, by feeling that pain. Now, when it comes to difficult situations, I have a tendency to want to take the easy way out, you know. Maybe I'll eat like a gallon of ice cream, or maybe I'll go to the racetrack. Or maybe, you know, go and call a hooker. Maybe I'll do this. I'm sober. I didn't drink or drug. But I have a lot of other choices I have to make. Choices that when I get in difficult and missing emotional situations, in situations where I have to deal with people, and that's where my difficulty rises, that I have to make the right choice. We'll accept often in situations that I'm actually powerless. That actually in situations I do have self-esteem, and I'm not a bad guy. I've always had low self-esteem, and I try to fake that I didn't. But now I finally, not 24 hours a day, I have self-esteem because I've shown it to myself. I've shown it to other people, but I've shown it to myself that I can actually do the things I talk about. I finally have begun, and it's taken me a lifetime, to forgive myself for having defects of character, for having shortcomings, for having anger towards people sometimes, for having a whole array of emotions. Because I thought I'd come in here, take this book, learn it, and I would be a new man. And everybody would line up, you know, to say, here he is. But that's not the way it happened. I had to go down a terrible, terrible hill. And I ended up, you know, forget about alcohol, gambling, prisons, jails, loony bins. The crack pipe is a good thing to suck onto when you really want to take a skid. It's something that really takes the life away. If you've got any hope and you get on that, your hope is gone. You've become no hope. You know, and all my life, I thought I could buy hope. And I was trying to buy a way out of it. Buy hope. So I had to get to a point of accepting my absolute hopelessness and helplessness. And that only came at one cost. Giving up thinking about me all the time. Even when I was trying to sponsor people often, I would often be thinking about me. How was I really being effective to help a person when I'm thinking about me? I'm trying to listen to people's fifth steps, and I'm thinking about me. I could never tell you guys that before, because that's where I was. That's what this illness, this disease of alcoholism has me do. It has me want to put myself ahead of you no matter what. And I know that my recovery is very important, that I try to help other people and think of their interest to the best of my twisted ability. Because the great thing is that that kind of like twist in character gives a kind of a fun to life too. Because it's kind of like, you know, it's Rule 62. As we saw on page 149 of the 12 and 12, on the end of the four tradition, it's don't take yourself too damn seriously. You know, and I try to practice that with the people I work with. It wasn't long ago, I was an ex-con, a bank robber, a convicted pimp, an arms trafficker, drug trafficker. Been convicted in two countries, in the United States and Canada. I've had tragic things happen. People have, to friends who have perished. I've had friends, four friends, very close friends who went out on a boating on Lake St. Louis, and there wasn't room in the boat for me. And the boat overturned in a thunderstorm, and they all died. All four of them. We dragged the lake for a week to find the bodies. It was a real tragedy. And I have a lot of real tragedies happen to me in my life that, I could use as excuses for, misbehaving right now. But at this point in my life, I don't want to do that. I've been given a gift of a job. I have a job now, which is amazing. For the first time, a real job. It's not like some twist to it. It's a job actually working in the community. It's a job where I spend my days helping other people. It's a job that the person that was formerly my therapist and helper is now a colleague. She's the person I share an office with. I've been given recognition working in the community and working helping other people. And that is indeed a miracle. Things like that should not happen to me. I should be dead. People like me and of my type, hopeless character, usually die. I've seen many people in AA die. And I don't say it to pat myself on the back, this is what I've done. It's the miracle of the choices that God has allowed me to make and the people that God has put into my life that have brought me into a new level of existence I couldn't imagine. I live in a place that I like. I can look out the window. I have a beautiful view. Before, I would often look at brick walls or iron bars. Are the nurse coming with those pills? Are the injection? Are the restraints coming to hold me down? I would live with the torment, the mental disturbance of unexpressed feelings. I could never express how I felt from the time I was a little boy. And it comes back. Yesterday I went to visit my parents. Thank God they're still alive. They've been married 62 years. I sat down with my father and I realized, my God, he was just obsessed about something. He wanted to fix my computer and he was obsessed with it. And he went on and on and on. And he couldn't help himself. And I felt myself getting really pissed off. Really pissed off. And I had to get out of the room. I had to get away. But the one thing that God allows me to, and Alcoholics Anonymous allows me to do now, is I keep the tongue closed. I don't say anything. I could love him the way that he is. I don't have to hurt him with my tongue and say things that would upset him. He's a man, he's in the last stages of his life. I can accept now that he did damage me in certain ways when he was younger. But I don't have to blame them anymore. I could love them for the way that they have committed to each other and to their family for 62 years. My father suffered from post-traumatic stress disorder from the Second World War. He had to do some things that I can only imagine. He had to kill and cut people's throats and do things that happen in war. He had to do reconnaissance work. It's not like now we have drones in the sky. In those days, you went behind the enemy lines and you had to survive. I can't imagine living like that. So I come to understand that this man was affected by people and the things that he experienced. That is indeed a gift for me. And the thing that I try to do each day, because my job, I work with people who have mental health problems, on all kinds of levels. And I can really relate to them. And I have a special knack, people tell me, to be able to reach out to them and help them to reach their maximum potential. And that is indeed an absolute miracle that I am accepted in this organization and people come to me for advice. That's unbelievable. We have intake workers and they have difficult cases. They come, Steve. They ask me my opinion. Because I've been often that person that's about to lose control. I've been that person who's felt that an avalanche of emotions exploding inside of them and they didn't know what to do, didn't know how to express it and come out in anger. I understand that because I've lived it. You see, this disease of alcoholism cleaned me out completely. Cleaned me out of all hope. And God, with the help of AA and some of the people, not all of the people in the rooms have been helpful to me, but some people have been very helpful to me, and that's the reality of life. I don't have to love everybody that I meet, but I got to accept them the way that they are in order to me to be able to put my head on a pillow at night and have a chance to have peace of mind. Peace of mind at all costs. That means doing the right thing, trying to help my brother or sister, and be grateful for what I got. Thanks.